Hello, everybody. Good morning to those of you who are in the UK in the same time zone as us, and good afternoon, evening, who knows what, to everyone who is with us from around the world. This is Lizzie and Justin from Third Space. This is the 339th week of our Turning Towards Life conversation, and you are all so welcome to join to be with us and to join us wherever you are in the world. And we know that this conversation spans the entire globe in one way or another. And also, whenever and wherever you are when you're listening to this, we're really glad to be in this big and long conversation with you. I was reading something this week, Lizzie. I think I said this to you the other day about how so much on the internet has become deadened and soulless and predictable and artificial and algorithmic and all of those kind of things. And I was feeling very glad, both as part of this conversation, and I know for everything that we do in Third Space, that this is an expression of when we do things online, our intention is to go completely the opposite way and have them be live and real and contactful and intimate and meaningful and deep and rich and all the things that in the midst of the vast explosion of content that there is everywhere sometimes can be hard to find. So it's a great gift to have this technology to make it possible to reach out into the world and for me to see you and to know that there are hundreds and hundreds of people with us. And thank you, as always, Lizzie, for bringing a really extraordinary and very rich source, which is going to begin our conversation this morning.
Yeah, I'm really happy, Justin, to be here and to be bringing this poem by James Cruise. So James is a friend of Rosemary Witola-Trommer, who's also a lovely friend of ours. And I wouldn't know about James unless I knew Rosemary. And I feel like this is the wonder of our community that we're making all the time through Turning Towards Life, is that there are people like the other day, Justin, somebody came to us completely randomly just because they Googled something, I think, and then listened to us and felt like they could feel home with us, and then went to our website, and there's like random things like that. And then there's these community things like the connection with Rosemary and James. And I'm so glad that that's possible. So glad that James has written this. So glad that all of these connections exist through our doing this. It's really quite magical to me. And this is a poem called Like the Trees. And we'll both have a read, Justin, and see where this takes us. But James, maybe this could be a gift to you, just like with so many of these things that we read, that the person who the words came through and who brought the poem into life, they can re-receive that piece of work through our conversation. It often happens that that's how it lands in the person who made the poem. So, James, this is a dedication to you, a gift to you, a thank you to you, and also, we're going to be fully in receipt of your wonderful heart and wanderings about life through this poem. So thank you. So here we go. Like the trees. You have been waiting for the body to say, this is not an emergency. You are safe. And when it finally does, in a whisper you almost don't believe, you can breathe a full breath again and then another. At last, trusting the open arms of trees, even their menacing shadows at night. Now, you know everything that grows must also feel pain, must fear and doubt until they sense this same quickening, like sap rising up in the trunk and spreading through each limb. You have lived as if underground, but now you are breaking open, breaking free, becoming so vast and green, you make a shady place for others to rest in.
Lizzie, and thank you, James. This is like the trees. You have been waiting for the body to say, this is not an emergency. You are safe. And when it finally does, in a whisper, you almost don't believe. You can breathe a full breath again, and then another. At last, trusting the open arms of trees, even their menacing shadows at midnight. Now you know everything that grows must also feel pain, must fear and doubt, until they sense this same quickening, like sap rising up in the trunk and spreading through each limb. You have lived as if underground, but now you are breaking open, breaking free, becoming so vast and green, you make a shady place for others to rest in.
Justin. So I have to say this, as with so many of our sources, you could just read the first two lines, Justin, and I could just think and feel and reflect on that forever, it feels like. And that goes for every couple of lines. And when you were talking, Justin, I was, what came to mind was this way in our work that we talk about narratives, about stories that we live out of and into, and that keep the world as it is, and or which shifts the world for us in some way. And often I felt like the story of a tree is, and it is, it has deep roots, is very, very well connected to all the other trees. It gives life, it recycles, it's participant in the world in very meaningful, important ways, all those things. And it's strong and present, purely and available for anybody that wants to hug it and come towards it. And it stands tall. And there's so many distinctions about trees that are really meaningful to me. And then I read this and I thought, my goodness, this is like a whole nother multiple aspects of the story of us being like trees, the possibilities that open up if we were to be like the trees. And I feel that this distinction about trusting the open arms, even in the menacing shadows, is such an incredible invitation, and one that in those times of the menacing shadows of our lives, and when it feels like it's midnight and no one else is around, that can be trusted too, that is trustworthy. It feels really radical. It feels really kind of contra to what the experience is like to be in that darkness. And of course, that's not separate to this safety that James talks about at the beginning, where our bodies have so much to do with whether it feels safe to feel all the things, because our body is here at the same time as I'm having feelings. My body is here at the same time as I'm having thoughts. But so many times it's possible to be so subsumed and taken by my thinking or taken by my feeling and to forget that the body even exists. And yet the body is this ever-giving presence that is the treeness, that is the support, that is the solidity in which all these things, these experiences of being a human can arise. And of course, they're just so intertwined. And I feel like this poem to me is a big invitation to allow and to cultivate an awareness of the body at the same time as whatever these experiences are that are happening. And how so often that's not what's going on. You know, I notice how quickly I can leave my body, or my bodily, I can't leave my body, but like I can leave my bodily awareness. I can become blind to the fact that I have a body when all the tumult is happening, or all of the, when there's an argument happening, or when there's difficulty, and also when there's excitement or joy. And this is an invitation for this becoming vast and green in my body, so that I can be safe, really, that I can be steady, that I can be steady for myself and also for others, and be a container for this life that I'm in contact with, and which is so profoundly supportive of our experiencing, fully experiencing and fully living our lives.
Really with you, Lizzie, about how easy it is for many of us to forget our own bodies and the if I think about our bodies as trees or our bodies as like trees, it's not so hard to imagine this narrative, that an act of imagination that also seems to me has very straightforward congruence and truth. Like, we may not have roots that extend into the ground deep, 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 deep and far. But if we feel into it for a moment, we can feel how our bodies do have roots. Like the humans who were our birth parents, whatever our relationship was with them, they had birth parents too, and they had birth parents too, and they had birth parents too, and it goes all the way back. So we do have roots that extend and extend and branch and extend back in time, for example. We didn't just pop into existence, although it's hard when you're a human because we don't typically remember our birth, at least not consciously, and we don't maybe remember being very, very little. So somehow it can feel like, oh, I just appeared one day. But actually, we're deeply rooted beings. And what you said about the experience of somehow forgetting ourselves, like forgetting the essential truth of ourselves, I know this very well as somebody who easily forgets. You can easily feel like a floating mind somehow. And then the inevitable, I really appreciated this in James's poem, everything that grows must also feel pain and must fear and must doubt. When I meet that, the inevitableness of it, sometimes my pains and fears and doubts are appropriate responses to the world, and sometimes they're like the free floating imagination that I can get into. And when I feel very, it's easy to feel far, far from ourselves. And so this act of remembering our own bodies can also be, like you say, a way of remembering a sort of inherent trustfulness in the existence of things. And it occurred to me whilst you were talking that most, I think many of us never really had much help in remembering ourselves back in the way that you're describing, because the wider culture that we live privileges often the mind and thought and imagination over our remembering of our bodily existence. Like the body is a distraction or maybe something to make look great or something, but not home. Like we haven't, many of us, had a chance to find ourselves home. And we also, many of us, live in a culture that's still quite caught up in the idea that the resolution to pain, fear and doubt is the pain, fear and doubt going away because you live in the right house or had the right partner or had the right money or looked the right way or got the right job, or, you know, those kind of the sort of promises of our culture, which is that pain, fear and doubt are to be solved. Instead of what, I mean, some of them are to be solved, of course, but that is a condition that they can be solved. Whereas what I understood from what you were saying from reading James's poem is that there's a coming back home to our rootedness and our bodiliness, which can be a great source, as James also says, a great source of return to a whisper that we almost don't believe, and a full breath and another, and a kind of trustfulness. Anyway, I think what I'm saying is, it's difficult for any of us who, it's difficult if we haven't learnt a way to make that kind of return. We can spend a long time waiting. And maybe, so last thing for now, maybe this point that you make about trees, that James is also making about trees, is one of the ways to do this is to really feel our kinship with what's around us. And trees are absolutely wonderful exemplars of this quality. So there's nothing quite like really taking on the imaginative act of feeling the way in which we are already like trees, or I think getting out and finding a tree. And this is something I find very helpful, getting my back against a tree and feeling the kinship between the body of the tree and the body of me, which reminds me of the same quickening, the sap rising in the trunk and spreading through each limb and breaking open and being vast and green, all of which are already true, but which I forget.
My gosh, as you said, that thing about having your back against a tree, I somehow made this link between the beginning of James's poem and the end of it, which is it begins with us and our own bodily safety. And then we become this shady place for others to rest in. And as you put your back against that tree is the shady place for you to rest in. And then we get to be that for others too. So the trees are like, I don't know, the kings or something, and we're slightly smaller than the king, and then we get to, because we're a little bit smaller or a little bit less safe than the tree gets to be benevolent towards us and gift us its shade. And then in us being given the shade, we can gift that to other people too. And I'm thinking, Justin, you know, I live like 15 minutes from Richmond Park, and there are trees in there. We found out the other day, we found these volunteer ranger people who are just the most amazing, knowledgeable people about everything that's going on in the park. And we had this big long talk with them, and they were talking to us about the 800-year-old trees that exist in the park at the moment, and how they take care of them, and which ones they are, and how to recognize them. And they were talking about the what do you call it, like the circumference of the trunk and how big that is and how that denotes how old the tree is. And we ended up putting our arms around the tree and having to join, I think it was four of us or something, joined with our arms completely outstretched to hold this 800-year-old tree. And it's so crazily still and powerful and beautiful, and goodness knows what those trees have seen and where they've been. And there are roots that extend down into the ground of that tree, but there are also the roots, like you were talking about, of that tree, of everything that's happened in time around that tree and to that tree. And there's so much to be shaded by. It's so huge by comparison to this one human life. And so for us to be in receipt of that resting place in that shade, and for James to be inviting us to see ourselves and to narrate ourselves as this kind of safety is really quite amazing. And what I'm receiving kind of broadly as I zoom out as well is that it's possible for us to become safer and safer and safer the more we do our own work of welcoming fear, doubt, and pain. And we can then be that for other people too. And if we haven't done that for ourselves, it's impossible to do that for other people. And for our bodies not to take us out of there or shut something down or push it aside. And so I'm really held by and inspired by this putting the body really at the center of our capacity to be with our own experience and not run from it and not push it away, not push it down. And also then allow others to understand and feel the safety of us, given that that's what we're up to, so that they can be with us and feel all those feelings and be afraid. And our bodies can support us in serving them by being with them in it as well. And the really wonderful thing for me, Justin, is that the breath and the body are always a nanosecond away. They're always here. So wherever I find myself, whatever kerfuffle, whatever difficulty, whatever grief, whatever anything, I can always have a breath and rely on my body and see if I can, in that moment, reflect on and become safer and become safer and become safer for whatever's happening around me and also inside of me as well. So safety for myself and safety for other people in my life too.
Kind of safety that it can be quite tempting to create, which is the safety of there's no pain here, there's no fear here, there's no doubt here, which isn't actually safety at all, because the moment we feel pain, fear or doubt, or the moment we're in the presence of somebody else's pain, fear or doubt, what we're trying to do is make it go away, because that itself is considered unsafe. And then there's a much deeper safety, the safety of deep roots of the 800-year-old oaks in Richmond Park, which is the safety of being with the pain, the inevitable pain, fear and doubt, and also the sap rising up in the trunk and spreading through each limb, and the trustability of our bodies and our breath and the trees. And seems to me a very necessary and life-giving path that takes, for many of us, an enormous amount of ongoing attention to cultivate, to keep on returning to. I think that the thing that you said seems so important to me is that the kind of bodily safety that there can be, that deeper depth and wideness that there can be in us is not far away, even if we have, because of our experiences or because of the way that our minds and feelings go, whatever it is, even if what we typically feel is an enormous amount of the overwhelming feeling of the pain, fear and doubt, it's really good to know that our bodies never went anywhere, that they're close in. And then, as James said, sometimes we wait a long time to feel for the first time this isn't an emergency and you're safe. But I feel very enhopened by our conversation, because we humans all have this. We all inevitably have bodies, inhabit bodies that really can be like trees. And I really, really love this invitation of learning to know pain, fear and doubt, and quickening and sap rising and breaking open and vast and greenness, and the relief of not everything is an emergency, and deliberately attending to becoming a shady place for others to rest in. Like, what a life project to take on, which is quite different from, I think, you know, for any of us who want to be of service to others, and many, many people do, because it's a very ordinary human thing is to want to take care of one another. In fact, I think it's the primary human thing is to want to take care of one another, not to dominate or hurt or be violent to one another. It's actually, it's our wish to take care and be cared for. It's quite easy to imagine that always involves some kind of scurrying around, rushing, doing many things. And James's words offer us a very, very deep alternative is, yeah, there's lots to do for one another, of course. But primarily, becoming vast and green, so other people get to feel safe, to be fully present and rest in our presence. Actually, the more we attend to that in ourselves and the more we attend to it collectively, the better chance we have for making a world where we can address our pain, fear and doubt instead of reacting to everything like it's an emergency all the time.
I love what you said, Justin. I feel really met and reconnected to this feeling of becoming deliberately safer and safer for other people. I just think that's such brilliant language for what it is that I think is a massive part of yours and my commitment in the world, is to become deliberately safer all the time And of course, our lives give us these opportunities to become that every day. You know, life is happening to us, and we get to see these things, these happenings, these circumstances, everything as opportunities to become safer for ourselves and other people. And that really is possible. That really is a thing to do with things. Like, it really is an intention to hold when everything is going wrong, or everything's difficult, or our children bring us stuff that we've got no idea how to handle. If we have this intention inside of us, and community around us, and ways to speak about our experience of being human that are framed in this way of, I'm deliberately looking to become safer and safer. I'm deliberately looking to become more and more of a welcome to what's your truth, what's happening for you, and what's happening for me. That is such an underpinning why to do anything. It's enough of a reason for me to go through pain and to go through difficulty and to not run away, because if that's what I can become, you know, like you said, I think I'm one of those ordinary humans for whom being with others and turning towards others and being in somehow of service to all of us and our freedom, our being more loving and enjoying being a human being as best we can, and finding meaning and making the contribution and bringing our gifts that we're supposed to bring. Like, that's what I want to be in service of. And so to be deliberately more and more safe gives me such a wonderful, it's like one of those moments, Justin, that happens quite a lot here, where I think, oh, I need to make like some kind of sticker of that and put it on my wall, so it just is behind everything that I'm up to, and have it on the fridge, and have it on the bathroom mirror, and have it everywhere. And it feels such a beautiful invitation. And I want to thank James for being the person who has found a way for this poem to get to us, because he wrote it and brought it into the world and didn't keep it only for himself. And that we can talk in this way because of this beautiful piece of his work. So I'm so grateful to James. I'm so grateful to all of the community also around James as well, that is seeing him and welcoming his gifts, as we welcome your gifts, James. And Justin, thank you for being the person here right now who's in this conversation with me. Thank you for everybody listening. Thank you for the space that this opens up for us, Justin, but for also for everybody else. It's a really big gift. And James, I hope you can feel your gift spreading like very, very fast and thoroughly through humans through this way. So thank you. And Justin, we're going to be back again next week with a poem or a source or some writing or something chosen by you. And I'm really already looking forward to that sanity and saving grace of life to be here and be in these conversations.
Thanks, Lizzie. Thank you, everybody.
Bye.